This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin on Zoomer Radio, aided and abetted by yours truly. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm very well, Dean. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm really good. I'm enjoying this this sunny weather. You know, we certainly have had our here anyway. We've had we had some rain earlier in the week, but now it's been really beautiful.
It's pretty blue at my place. A little bit of wispy cloud. Very good working temperatures these last few days for being outside in the garden. Nice, you know, low 20s instead of high 20s. So I can't complain about the weather. Been getting lots done, and it's June already.
It is. That's right. It's the 1st of June today, The first weekend. Here we are in the 6th month of the year, and things are popping up everywhere. I'm sure at your garden as well. What's your favorite thing that's popping up right now?
I'm seeing beautiful poppies in other people's gardens, and I'm coveting those. I don't have any poppies at my place. I'm all about irises, like really plants that can handle the heat and the drought. I've got salvia blooming like crazy. I have a very deep red peony that's putting on a beautiful show right now, alongside a purple-leaved barberry. So there's lots of blues and reds and purples going on at my place, which is kind of fun because it was all very orange a month ago.
Yeah, I would love to see a picture of that peonies because we have some peonies as well. But ours are a very typical pink. They're not open yet, but I guess you're just a little bit more south than we are. So
my pink one isn't open yet either. There are many different varieties, so they do have different bloom times. And you know, a friend of mine who lives 10 kilometers away, her peonies are already done.
Oh wow!
So she's just that much more sheltered and ahead of me. She always is. Her daffodils are up before me, everything, and 10 kilometers away.
Wow. So it can make a big difference.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay, let's give the numbers out. We would love for you to give us a call, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Or if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, here's a toll-free number, 1-866-740-4740. Do let Ash know if you're a first-time caller, and I'll give you your garden wings. We love that. We want you to call often. We want you to call early, please. Yeah, don't leave it to the last 10 minutes because then we might not be able to get to you. And this is an important one. One question per call, please, so we can get everybody in. Okay. Do you have any announcements?
Yes, quickly. The Agent Court Garden Club would like everybody to know they're welcome to attend their meeting, which is on Monday, June the 10th, 7:30 p.m. And guess who's the speaker? Somebody we know well here on The Garden Show. Terry and her husband, Doug Kennedy, will be speaking about orchids at the show at the Agent Court Garden Club event. It's both a flower show and a meeting at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd in Toronto.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, lots to talk about today. Again, if you have an indoor gardening question, an outdoor gardening question, a pruning question, a transplant, whatever, give us a call. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, yeah, we are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin. I'm going to give out the numbers one more time, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We have lots of room on the lines, but we're going to start things off, Charlie, with a first-time caller. Yeah, we have Ron calling from Nobleton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Ron.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Oh, love it. Yeah, love you at the call. We'd like to give you your garden wings, sir. There you go. You earned them.
Well, thank you very much. We listen to your show. My wife and I listen to your show every Saturday consistently Thank you very much putting it on.
Well, don't be a stranger. Call anytime.
Well, thank you very much. My question this morning is, we've had boxwood bushes for a long time, and this year is the first year that they're all the leaves are being eaten and they're yellow. Is there something going on with them?
There is, and I hope there's other people listening. This is a great question, who have boxwood. There is a very invasive pest that arrived in the Toronto area, actually first showed up in Etobicoke in 2018, and it's called the box tree moth. The little green and black caterpillars that are on your boxwood right now that are eating the leaves will turn into a moth, which of course will then eventually lay eggs and the whole thing starts again. So your job, I mean, they started eating in the Toronto area, and you're a little bit north, so you might be a week or so behind, but they started becoming a real issue about 2-3 weeks ago. So right, you know, as soon as you get off the phone with me, get outside, take a look. If you see any living, you know, alive caterpillars, like I say, they're about green, black, maybe a quarter to a half an inch long, eating on your boxwood and leaving behind webbing, you can get in there with your fingers and start squishing. You can also, if you have it on your shelf or you can get it at your local garden center, get something called B as in Bob, T as in Tom, so BTK. That is a form of bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis, which you mix with water and you spray onto your boxwood today. And the idea is that that layer of bacteria sits on the boxwood, and the little larva or caterpillars chew the boxwood and die after ingesting the bacteria. It will not hurt birds or cats or dogs or people, but it does hurt any insects that chew the leaves. And you need to do that if you have any hope of saving the boxwood. They will kill your boxwood if you don't do that, and they may still kill your boxwood. This is going to be an ongoing problem with all the boxwood.
I see. What I did do, Charlie, is that I sprayed them with a sulfur mixture mixed with water. Mm-hmm. Would that help in any? Because that BTK, I've heard about it, and it's all on back order. I Googled it. It's pretty well on back order.
Yes, I'm not surprised. This happened 3 years ago when gypsy moths, also known as spongy moths, were endemic everywhere in Ontario. The BTK went on back order, and you could get it on Amazon for four times the price of what it was supposed to be because of an inventory shortage. The sulfur probably will not do anything in terms of killing the insects. Certainly won't hurt the boxwood. Do you have any other kind of insecticide in your arsenal? Even soap, even like a safer soap would be better than nothing. But again, it's a thorough spraying because you want to coat those little insects with the soapy spray, or like I said, pick and squish.
I see. What about the grub mix? Would that help? The stuff you use to spray the grubs with?
What stuff is that?
Oh, I don't have the name of it, but it's a liquid you mix it in with water and you spray the grubs with it.
Right. So is that a BT product? You'll have to look at the active ingredients on that. There's a couple, like Grub Be Gone. There's a couple of different things out there. So Grub Be Gone is a BT product, but it's not BTK.
Right.
I think it's BTG. Again, it's probably worth a try. I mean, you'll probably kill some, but at this point, picking and squishing, how many boxwoods do you have?
Oh, quite a few of them.
like a couple of hundred or 10 or 12?
No. About 10 or 12.
Okay. Well, you know what? Pour yourself a cup of coffee, get a little camp stool, sit down and start squishing, I'd say.
Okay. Well, that's at least we're on the right track and we know what the heck it is now anyway.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry you've got that. We are going to talk more, I think, in the future about replacement plants for boxwood, because you're just not going to want to plant boxwood to replace these if they die.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Great advice.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Thank you
so much for taking my call. Thanks for the call, Ron. Yep. And again, as Charlie said, don't be a stranger. Charlie, quick question. I know we've talked about, or I've asked you before, about fertilizer, namely fertilizing sticks. And you say that they never go bad. Like, you know, they have a long shelf life. Would the same be for this BTK? Would it be something that you could grab when it is available and just keep it in your arsenal so in case you need it in a couple of years?
It will have a date on it because it is a living bacteria, so it's a dated product. The other thing is with my BT products and any of my living products, I do not leave them out in the garage over the winter. I try to keep them in, I put them in the basement for the winter. And even if my garage gets really hot in the summer, again, I try to bring them in the house. You don't want to expose any of your living control products to extreme weather, so extreme heat or cold.
Okay, gotcha. So it doesn't have the same longevity as a fertilizer. But it still would have a decent, you know, because it seems like, you know, these, especially for people who have things like boxwoods, this is a problem, I'm guessing, that is not going away.
That's exactly right. That's the problem is that, I mean, it's kind of ironic. The other morning, my doorbell rang and I went to the door and the gentleman who built my house, so the builder who lives not far away, is standing in my front door and he goes, without even saying hello, he goes, I have a question for you. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what? He goes, what's on my boxwood? And he's really into boxwood. He doesn't have hundreds either, though I know people that do. And his are all perfectly coiffured. They're trimmed to perfection. Very formal garden around his house. And all of his boxwood are copper colored or bright orange almost. And he was kind of funny. He goes, I saw something starting last year. And he said, I asked my landscaper friends and they said it was winter burn. And I said, well, you should have asked me. I could have told you last year what it was. And we could have probably saved your boxwood if you had called me or we'd spoken last year. But meanwhile, he had already sprayed with the BT. He had gotten a hold of some. But I'm sure that there's no insects on them anymore because the plants are dead. The insects move on to more nice fresh boxwood down the road.
Sure. Wow. That's very sad. Especially, again, if you have invested so much time and years in having it and you get used to it and then to have it annihilated like that must be really hard.
So I gave him a suggestion on what to use to replace with instead.
Okay, well, maybe we can talk about that when we come back. We do have a caller on the line, but folks, we have lots of room. Don't wait. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show, and I think we might have to rename the show or the episode of this as the boxwood episode because, you know, and for gentlemen, because I got two more fellas on the line, and I believe that we're still going to talk about boxwoods a bit. So let's go to our next caller. We have Bob from Don Mills. Welcome to The Garden Show, Bob.
Well, thank you for having me. I have some supplemental questions, Charlie. Our boxwood turned brown, and there are a couple of little green shoots popping out here or there amongst them, and at the bottom. But for the 99% of the boxwood, it's brown. I guess I have two questions. How do we know that this is dead? I read online that these things recover very slowly if they recover. And B, if they are dead, how big is the root ball on these things? Because I know we have a neighbor next door that just got rid of a yew bush, and good heavens, they're still trying to dig the roots out from them.
Yeah, but yews can last for 40, 50 plus years in the landscape. Usually boxwood doesn't last that long. Did you plant them yourselves or were they planted when you moved in?
Yeah, we moved in about 20 years ago and they were planted there. So they've had a good long run.
And what have you been keeping them trimmed to a certain size?
Yes, well, they're a nice, neat 3 feet across and 4 feet high.
Oh, beautiful. So you're going to miss them. Yep, they probably have a root ball, so it's probably somewhat equivalent to the size of the plant, maybe as much as 18 to 24 inches deep, and certainly if they're all planted together as a hedge, you'll find that there's, you know, kind of a consistent root mass right across between each plant. But it won't be a super deep root ball, and it's quite fibrous. It's not like a big structural serious roots, but still it's going to be some digging to remove them if you so decide. Have you sprayed them? It sounds like you might have.
No, you know what? Thank you for the spray tip. We're going to do that as soon as we hang up, and we'll stay on for the rest of your show because it's also very interesting. But after it's over, we're going to spray, and once we do spray, how long would we wait to see if we are having some positive effect?
Yeah. Well, I mean, aesthetically, even if you kill the insects that are on the plants now, which they likely are, though they do have a life cycle, so they do move on from being little caterpillars to being moths. So don't spray unless you see green and black living, chewing insects, because otherwise you're really just wasting your spray. Okay. What you'll do is you'll trim, once you've either sprayed or not, you will want to trim out some of what is clearly dead, and that will force out new growth, assuming that the root is alive and the plant has the juice in it to set it, you know, send out new leaves. Mm-hmm. I would fertilize just to encourage that growth, water, you know, do what you can to really tender, loving care the boxwood that you have. And it will take a number of years, who knows how many, to get it back to what it was, assuming that you can make that happen. The problem is this insect isn't going anywhere. That's the problem.
So the good news is that I'm hearing coming up in the near future, you'll be having some suggestions as to replacement plants, etc.
Yes, I do. I definitely do.
Well, thank you so much for being there, and you certainly have clarified our thinking and what our problem is.
Thanks for calling, Bob. Get out your paper and your pencil and get ready for some suggestions.
Will do. Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks again, Bob. Fabulous. Okay. Again, the number is 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We have Michael on the line calling from Etobicoke. Welcome to the Garden Show, Michael.
Good morning, Dean and Charlie. Yeah, this is, of course, about the box tree moth. I was one of your first callers 5 years ago about it. I've been battling with it. I'm in the Etobicoke area. I'm pretty well ground zero where it started. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, Charlie, from my experience, it's a real losing battle. I had professional spraying done very excellently, and I supervised it and worked with the people. I had about 100 specimens. Some were 40 years old, magnificent. I've had to take everything out. And what your listeners should know, there were at least every year since 2018, two clutches of, or the hatching of the larvae, and in a few years, it was three. And you have to do it each time of three. So in my case, I spent about $2,000 a year to try to save them with a very thorough spraying. And even the company that was doing it said, you're only putting off the inevitable because eventually they will all succumb. And after 5 years, they all have. And I started right from the beginning in year one, which was 2018. So I can tell you from very sad, costly experience, you can try to keep them. I did the squishing. I did everything. But you can't do it with hundreds of bushes, and you'll still miss them, and they go. It's really sad. I have to tell you, I'm devastated because Agriculture Canada was aware of the problem, and they did precious little to stop it and head it off. And just yesterday, lastly, I was at the Niagara Parks, and they were boastful to 2 years ago that they didn't see a box tree moth. Well, I can tell you, yesterday, I saw the signs all over the Niagara Parks gardens that were never there before. They're spraying madly with the BTK in the hope of staving it off, but I don't think they'll be able to.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct, Michael, that two things. One is there's more than one generation a year, and this year being a mild winter and an early spring, you can know in your heart that there's at least three generations this year, because insects respond to temperature. And so the warmer, the longer the warm season, the more activity we have from so many of our insects. So even though there's an infestation of larvae now, what is it, 4 or 5 weeks from now, we'll be right back where we are right now with another infestation of a new generation of the little caterpillars. So it's, and it is not a winning battle. Ultimately, so many of these invasive insects, they move, they have wings, so they can move to different neighborhoods and different boxwood plants. But then we also spread these insects when we share plants, we move plants, we buy plants. And nurseries have been aware. I know you think Ag Canada wasn't doing anything, but they were doing what they could in terms of certifying sterile material if it was crossing borders or moving, well, particularly borders, because Ag Canada doesn't control municipalities or provinces. They only control the federal lines of our country. So yes, there was a lot of effort put into trying to not bring in infested boxwood since the discovery, but it's happening. It happens. It's unfortunate, but it's a reality thing. Our world is smaller all the time.
Yeah. Well, I thank you, and with your wonderful show, to have the opportunity. And you and I, we've spoken maybe about two times previously about this, because I was trying so valiantly to stave it off. And again, I don't want to be the discouraging word, but it's not only me. And then in my immediate area here in Etobicoke, as you pointed out earlier to the callers, is where it started. And now eventually it in my area, it's virtually all gone. And another neighbor took out about 150 specimens just 2 weeks ago, or on my street. It's just hopeless. And we tried with the spraying again very, very valiantly and multiple times a year. And again, when you even have the sprayer saying you're just putting off the inevitable, you'll never stay on top of it. So I thank you for the opportunity to share this, maybe save some people some grief. But they really got to start thinking about replacement.
Thanks, Michael. Have you been replacing? Have you got something up your sleeve, or have you been recommended any particular plants?
It's a variety. Unfortunately, I've tried the inkberry, very poor results. I tried it even starting in 2018, 2019, and I've had poor results with it. I've tried it in different spots, and it doesn't seem to come round very well. So I found what I'm doing is different tries, if it's appropriate, imaginative small cedars, yews of different varieties and types and needle lengths. I'm trying that, and just kind of like a hodgepodge of solutions for the particular area. But to get that formal parterre kind of look, it's almost impossible. And the inkberry, I can tell you, I've had some in for 5 years. It just doesn't cut it. It's good for naturalized kind of appearance where you might have had boxwood. In some cases, I did, and that's okay, but it doesn't get the vigorous thrush of growth like the boxwood can. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so there are really some newer inkberries coming out now that I think have been selected specifically to try and provide that best replacement for the boxwood. But that's interesting, your experience there. And one quick question before I let you go. When you put in the inkberry, did you provide any kind of winter protection for them, some burlap or anything like that in terms of winter kill?
No, because it was in very sequestered spots. So I didn't need it, and it didn't succumb that way. It's just been not very vigorous, and it's just not as fully formed and dense. That's what I've really found the problem is. So if you really want to give it like a trim rip look in a more formal hedge kind of sense, you won't get it. You won't get it. Mm. And the sprayer who's also in on it, they said, no, you just can't. They've never seen it where it really gives you the same kind of look. They said they've never seen it anywhere, just can't achieve it.
Mm. All right. Good information. Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
A naturalized look, yes, it will work somewhat, but less vigorously.
Great.
So I've been like really working on this. I take a lot of pride in my garden, and I just cannot get it to work. So it's just a very sort of ad hoc series of kind of approaches. But I've had to give up on the formality, other than when hedging. If I get a low, dense, short-needled yew variety, that will kind of work.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Good to know.
It's so good to speak to you, and I hope your listeners will derive some benefit from this and learn from my experience.
Sure, I think they will. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, both of you. Have a great day.
Thanks very much for the call, Michael. Wow. That, you know what, I was doing some quick math in my head. You know, Michael was saying he was spending about $2,000 a year over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
That meant he spent about $10,000 trying to stop this from happening, and then lost them anyway. So a good point.
Yeah.
I can't. That's a lot of money.
And a lot of heartache and hard work.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, and think again about what Michael was saying. It's that formality that he was trying to maintain, that tightly clipped, evergreen, shiny boxwood look. And of course, what he's been working with is more fringy, not as tightly, you know, can't prune it quite as tight, get that same dense growth. So that, yeah, that is a learning experience for everybody, but also a design thing as well, that, you know, it's going to be hard, very hard. I wonder, we didn't mention, okay, I'm going to write down another couple of things while I think about them, but still, are they going to ever give you that truly formal look?
It seems to me, and I could be wrong, but when we had Paul Galletly on, the tattooed gardener, I think he actually said that it was the yew that he, I think that was the one that
he was replacing,
that he liked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of Paul, I remember him saying that he loved the Japanese maple. That was one of his favorite plants. And I think that we've got another caller on the line who's calling about that exact thing. And another fella. Yeah, we got Don on the line from Scarborough, who's a first-time caller. Welcome to the Garden Show, Don.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I'm going to give you your garden wings, okay? There you go.
Absolutely. Welcome to the show.
What do you got for Charlie there, Don?
I planted a Japanese maple about 2000 on my front lawn, and now it's a 15-foot-high beauty, except this spring, half of it is dead. And I looked online, the prognosis is, you know, it vary, but one guy said that, you know, it's, you might as well cut it down now. It's finished. And other people are saying just cut off the dead and hope for the best. The dead branches, and like basically half of it has leaves and is fine, and the other half suddenly this spring has no leaves, no buds. It's basically, I scraped they do a little scrape test. I scrape the bark, and it's brown underneath that thin layer, instead of green. They said it should be green. So
is it half
do
the
I
tree?
Cut the, like basically the half of the tree is dead, just suddenly this spring. And another thing I did was I fertilized with spring fertilizer on the grass, and someone suggested that Japanese maples don't like fertilizer.
No, that's not true.
So
no.
The question is,
fertilizer is you're providing nutrients because you're assuming that the plants you're feeding need supplemental nutrients. Something else has happened. So it's like half the tree. What side of the tree? North, south, east, west?
The north side of it.
North side. So, and it's big. Like I think you said, it's like 15 feet tall kind of thing, or 20 feet tall?
Yeah, pretty mature, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what I would do, because, yes, unfortunately, even though we had a mild winter, plants can do strange things for reasons we can't thoroughly understand. Something happened environmentally. It could have been around the base of the plant. Did you do any construction on that side of the tree, even 10 or 15 feet away? Was there any kind of, you know, compaction of the soil? Did anything change on that side of the tree that you know of in the last year?
All I noticed was there was somewhat of a ring around the base, all the way around where no grass was growing. And that was, I've really wondered about that. It was about a foot wide ring all the way around, no grass. Other than that, there's really nothing I can say, really, that nothing's changed.
Yeah, so that's interesting because that does tell you something if the grass doesn't grow there. Now, north side is shadier, so grass struggles a bit in shade versus sun. But, okay, so I'm just thinking two things. One is I would suggest a soil test from that north side of the tree, particularly if you're still struggling with grass or the soil in that area. Just go, if you Google OMAFRA, so Ontario Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs, so OMAFRA soil test. Google will give you the accredited soil testing labs. There is a couple in Guelph, which would be your closest ones to send soil samples to. And they'll explain very thoroughly how to get some soil samples, how to send them, and you'll tell them what your issue is. In the meantime, I would trim back all the dead on that Japanese maple. I would not just cut it down and give up. I would trim out all the dead. Then I'd stand back, and if the tree is really one-sided, like you really literally have growth only on one side and nothing on the other side, and make sure you're nice clean cuts with nice sharp tools, then I would also end up probably trimming back some of the living side to lighten the load in terms of the plant, balance it a tiny bit. No more fertilizer. Don't add anything. Just do some cleaning up and trimming and test the soil. That would be my suggestion for now. Okay.
Thank
and unfortunately,
very much.
We think we have to take a break, but thank
we
you. Do. Let us know how that works.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call there, Don. We do have to take a break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We're back here on The Garden Show. First day of June, first weekend of June. And summer is right around the corner and lots of people out gardening. We're going to go to our next caller. We have Rosa calling from Milton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Rosa.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning. What do you got there for Charlie there, Rosa? Go ahead.
Oh, okay then. I have a lilac tree outside in my garden, right? I guess I should say bush, but it's now so big like a tree. Now, what I want to know is, are we supposed to be, like, it's past for its beauty, right? So are we supposed to cut off all of those dead, that they're dried out flowers that were?
Yes, you are, if you can reach them.
Exactly. That's the whole problem here. Now, if I'm not able to do it, I want to know, is that what's making my lilac tree not to be so many of the flowers, like next year?
Okay, yes, partially. When we remove the spent flowers, we encourage green growth for the remainder of this growing season, which gives us more tips, like little tips on the branches for new flowers for next year. And the way lilac works is it actually sets its flower buds in the fall, which is why we never, ever prune a lilac in the fall, because we'll be removing next spring's flowers. You do any pruning you're going to do, you do now. So when we neglect lilacs for a number of years and they get taller and taller and bigger, then we can't reach to get, you know, the flowers are up 15 feet high. We can't smell them. We can't make bouquets of them. It becomes a real challenge. And they do get thinner and sparser and fewer flowers. So it becomes a bit hard that way as well. Depending on what kind of a lilac it is, what is it, just regular lilac color?
Yes.
So it's, and it is, I'm just wondering, because there's French lilacs, which are grafted lilacs, and they tend to be the pinks and the whites and the bicolors and the doubles. So this, it, as far as you know, is just a regular, nothing fancy lilac?
Yes.
Then I would, if you can, I'd look at it closely. I would get down on my hands and knees. I'd get out a saw, and I would remove from ground level some of the bigger, older stems, if you possibly can, without damaging some of the younger stems that are also down at ground level. Because what you want to do is you want to rejuvenate this plant by encouraging new growth, and the only way you're going to do that with a really old lilac is to take out some of the really old growth, which will be the thick stems, which will require a trimming, limbing type saw, and will also lower the height of the plant by the time you remove no more than a third of the plant at any one time.
Okay, my husband wanted to just take the saw and go right across it. Would that be all right?
Wouldn't be recommended, because it will not look very good when you're done. It will turn it into kind of a big frothy pom-pom kind of a bush, which isn't aesthetically really what you want. But it might be, for many people, it's the simplest thing. It's like giving a haircut to the whole plant. How tall is it at its tallest?
Oh, my God, I could not tell you that, but it is tall.
Yeah, so if you wanted to take that haircut approach where you just kind of zing straight across with a chainsaw, remember, a third to maybe as much as a half of the height could be lowered. So say it's 15 feet tall, you can bring the whole thing down to 7.5 feet and just go sort of straight across. It won't look great, but it'll probably survive if it's in good condition. So it's a vigorous, healthy tree. So make sure you're top dressing with organic material and you're doing whatever you can. The advantage of doing what I said, which is from ground level, is that you still open up some air for air circulation and sun penetration. So you will get more flowers doing it my route rather than your route. Your route will make it very dense. You have fewer flowers and a lot of green growth more than anything.
Okay, I'm sorry. We do have to run to our next commercial break. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We're here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, even you commented on the last break that it's very odd to have this many male callers. It's been a male-dominant show this
Love
week.
Love it.
Yeah, it's great. We have lots. And we've got Bob on the line from Pickering. And so welcome to The Garden Show, Bob.
Good morning. I'm glad to be a male on the show today.
Yeah, you're adding to my stats. Thank you.
I wanted to quickly to add to the conversation about boxwood. Unfortunately, I had dying back 3 years ago, and I was just trimming. I thought it was winter kill as well, and I was cutting it out. After 3 years, they're now dead, and I've just dug them out. I've done a fair bit of research, and what mine was, and I think what I've seen in my neighborhood, because of my neighbors who've got the same issue, is it's boxwood blight, which is a fungal disease. I've done a fair bit of research on it, and you can spray with it's systemic. So you can cut it out as soon as you see any dieback, you can cut it out, but your plant's going to eventually die after 5 or 6 years. And you can spray with fungicides, which delays the process, but they do die. So it's probably better just to dig them out. And you do get some green growth when you cut back, but again, it just year after year, it withers and withers until you get eventual death. It's really sad because so many of them are dying.
Sorry to interrupt, Bob, but so you never saw any webbing on your boxwoods or any small, tiny caterpillars eating the boxwoods?
No, none at all. It was just one branch would be brown at the end of the winter. And again, I thought it was winter kill, so I would just cut that off. Mm-hmm. Next year, there's maybe three branches. This year, all the bushes are devastated. I just dug them out yesterday.
Yeah. So the moth, the box tree moth, yeah, that some of the callers have been calling about, and that is really become a quite a big issue in the last few years, is just the newest in the pests and infestations of boxwood. So yes, perhaps, I mean, for sure, there is a boxwood blight that is a fungal disease. And the problem with any fungal disease, whether it's on boxwood or roses or your lawn, is that you can't ever eradicate the fungus. You can treat to slow down the growth and the spread of the fungus, but you can't truly eradicate it. And that's truly the frustration with fungal diseases. And systemic fungicides are no longer on the market here in Ontario. There used to be things like Captan and sprays we could spray that would stay in the plant so that in the future, that fungicide was available inside the plant to help control the fungus. But again, it wasn't ever truly eradicated. So I'm sorry you've had that experience. And, boxwoods have been very, very popular, but maybe it's time we moved on, I guess.
Well, in my research, I found that the breeders are well aware of this, and they've been spent the last 10 years trying to come up with the resistant varieties. And they have a list of, there are resistant varieties listed online. I got a couple, Golden Dawn or Green Beauty, one that's called Insularis Dantinana, and what's called the New Gem series. Unfortunately, when you read about those, they all say blight resistant. None of them say, you know, that they won't get blight. They will get blight, but they're resistant. So it sounds like boxwood is a real problem. And there are some yews, small yews, that all the recommendations are for small yews or the cedar and junipers to replace them.
Yeah, good points. Yep, good points for sure.
Okay. Yeah, thanks so much for the call there, Bob.
Yeah, thank
you very much.
Thanks, Bob. I'm just going to try and squeeze in this last caller. We have Sandra calling from Lindsay, and Sandra is a first-time caller, right?
Mm. That's right.
Okay, I want to give you your garden wings there, Sandra. And what do you got for Charlie there?
I wondered if she would know, or anyone would know, where I could get Campanula isophrilla. It's basically, they call it Star of Bethlehem, and nobody seems to have it. I don't know.
I feel like, I'm just quickly checking here. excuse me while I just double check here. So you're in the Lindsay area. I feel like that's a bulb, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yes, it is a bulb.
It shouldn't be. Pardon?
It is a little bulb.
Okay, but that's not a campanula then. Oh, there. No, the Star of Bethlehem is an ornithogalum, which is a bulb. But you're looking for, wait, you said campanula.
Isophrilla. They call it Star of Bethlehem, and I used to have one. It was a lovely hanging plant, but I haven't had it for a while, and everywhere I call, nobody seems to have it.
Huh. Okay. Spell isophrilla for me. Oh, there. Falling stars, Italian bell flower.
Yes, that's right.
Isophylla, tender perennial. It's only marginally frost hardy in North Carolina. So yeah, that's probably why you're not finding it. Probably that would be the kind of thing you'd have to look for seeds. Okay, so the common names, falling stars, Italian bellflower, Jerusalem star, Star of Bethlehem, trailing campanula.
Yeah.
You can leave that with me. I can see if I can see a source for seeds, but that is not going to be an easy plant to find because it is, it's treated as an annual. And so nobody would want to pay the kind of price it would be to grow something like that as an annual would be the issue.
But I think
apparently,
it's a perennial, really.
But it's a tender perennial. It will not survive the winter in Ontario.
But mine was a house. I had it as a house plant.
Oh, gotcha. That makes sense.
Sandra, we are going to have to run because we're in our last 30 seconds. You've given Charlie some homework for next week, and maybe we can do an update. But thanks so much for the call.
Yeah, thank you. I'll see if I can. Yeah, so as a houseplant. So that would be one of those things. Well, we just have to recommend it to the growers. Get on it. We need this grown as a houseplant because it's beautiful and blue. And I'll see what I can find out.
Okie doke. What do you got planned today? Any outdoor stuff?
Oh, yeah. Oh, haven't even had the gardens in place for 4 years, and already I'm in garden renovation mode.
Wow.
Poor Elliot. He's like, oh, does this ever end? He's learning. He's learning that gardening is a way of life. It's still spring. The weather is perfect. We've got plants to move, lawns to, you know, get out of the way, because the lawn is just too happy. It's moving into the garden. So it's a certain amount of that happening at my place. Yeah, we're all at a racetrack. What a busy show. Thank you, Dean.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
And Ashley, couldn't do any of this without your help, both of you, and to the great callers. And thanks for the homework. I'll see you all again next week.
The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin is brought to you by Urban Nature Store, enhancing the enjoyment and relaxation of wild birding. UrbanNatureStore.ca.
Good morning. I'm Jeremy Logan with your Zoomer Radio News. A sun cloud mix for your Saturday, a high of 25. Right now, it's 18 degrees Celsius in Toronto, 65 Fahrenheit. In the news, if you are motoring through the city tomorrow, don't say we didn't warn you.
I want to ride my I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it.
There will be major closures on both the DVP and the Gardiner Expressway on Sunday in order to accommodate the annual Mattamy Homes Bike for Brain Health. The ride supports world-leading research, innovation, care, and education at Baycrest for Alzheimer's and other dementias. The DVP will be closed in both directions from Lakeshore Boulevard to Highway 401. The Gardiner will be closed in both directions from the South Kingsway to the DVP. This includes the...
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.